Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the magnificent Monday edition of the Yard. We get some college football this week. It's not Mississippi State college football, but it is college football. I'm excited for that. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Going to give you some information, too, in this first segment, really, about kind of what's happening behind the scenes with all this 5-for-5 stuff. And hopefully, once you get through today's show, you'll kind of understand kind of the quiet crisis that schools are having with these recent rulings and what that all means. I'm going to do my best to kind of break it down to you in layman's terms. Also going to give you a little bit of a Robertson rant before we get to that. But I'm excited about today's top 10 list. I got a great suggestion. It was really more of a question. And I said, you know what? I can answer this on the show and also kind of celebrate the music of one of my favorite bands, one of my favorite albums from one of my favorite bands. And it may be an album that you miss that you want to go back and listen to. But I think you're going to love it. I love this band and this album. And then we'll get into some things over the weekend, you know, that happened. And you never know what else we may get into. But one thing that I want to point out, I mentioned the Robertson rant. I haven't done one of these in a while. I guess maybe that's in the ear of the beholder. Guys, I am so incredibly sick of poor customer service. I've gotten to a point now, like, that's the one thing that really, really, really irritates me. You know, money is so hard to come by right now for all of us. And so when you spend your hard-earned money to get something, you deserve to get good service. You do. You know, we own two small businesses. And Gene's Page, I guess it's technically a small business, but it's not really a small business. You know, we employ 7 people. But I guess in the grand scheme, you know, if we factor in revenue, that kind of stuff, it may not be what you guys are used to. But, we have a spa too. And, one of the main things that makes the spa run the way that it does is my beautiful wife. And it's not because she's so good looking. I'm sure that helps. It's because she has such a good nature with people. You know, if anything ever goes wrong, she just handles it, right? And while we may be a small business, we don't conduct ourselves like you owe us something. Now, many of you have supported us because you do love us and you want to support us. But we're never going to, like, weaponize your support of us into entitlement. And that's what I get a lot of. I've traded some emails today with this shipping company. So I ordered some clothes, right? And sometimes you want to treat yourself a little bit. And so I was kind of excited. I said, hey, I'm going to wear this outfit when we go to Minnesota. I'm excited about it. I got to go to Minnesota to wear it right now, but just because of the temperatures here. But I was excited about it. And even though I'm not going to wear it, I want it, right? And so anyway, to kind of make a long story short, so when I got ready to order this particular shirt that I wanted, gives you the option, right? You can do X amount of dollars for, 2 week shipping or whatever, and you can do 2 day shipping. Even though I'm not going to wear it, I wanted to go ahead and get it. So I went ahead and paid, I think it was 2 days, I think. And so I ordered them last Monday. And I thought maybe I'd get them by the weekend, maybe. Well, as of today, it still hadn't moved from the initial shipping point. And so I emailed these folks last week on Thursday, I guess, and ordered on Monday, and again, paid for 2 day shipping, I think. I have to go back and check, but it was like at most 3 days. So by the third day, I mean, I'm not tripping that I don't have it yet, but I start tripping because it hasn't, like, left their warehouse. I'm like, what are we doing? So I emailed these people, and again, it takes them like 2 days to get back to you. And You go on their website, there's no number to call. Well, you Google the number, you finally get a number to call, and then it says, hey, if you're trying to track a package, push this number. You push the number, and it goes, hey, to track a package, email us. So I go back through the queue. For all their inquiries, press 9. Well, guess what? I press 9. Oh, we're sorry, this mailbox is full. Yeah, no duh. So I email these people, and I'm like, dude, what is going on? And I was like, well, it takes 3 to 5 business days after we get it to like the last mile partner. And I'm like, well, you hadn't dropped it off yet with the last mile partner because it hadn't left your warehouse. And eventually it got a little more contentious. And I said, you guys are just not a serious company. That's the truth. I don't know what you tell yourself. You guys are not a serious company. And so I have decided I'm not going to buy shirts from this place anymore. My first time buying, like it kept like popping up on Instagram, you know, like, yeah, it goes. When, you know, you start looking for something, and all these, like, you know, famous musicians buy shirts from these people. I was like, hey, if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. So I ordered a shirt, and I can't wait to get it. It's not their fault, in many respects, that this shipping company is so terrible, and their customer service is so terrible. And, like, my last email from them is, like, if you have any further questions, contact the person you bought it from or the vendor you bought it from. And I responded, why would I contact them when you all have the package? We're just going to start this process over again so you can ignore my emails and just let my package sit in your warehouse, right? And it sounds so first world problems. And that's true because I grew up in an era where you had to allow 4 to 6 weeks for shipping. Do you remember that growing up? And it's like, please allow 4 to 6 weeks. And like if you got it in 2 weeks, you were like, dude, this is great. So for many of these businesses, let me be careful who you're using to do your shipping, period. It's because of the fact that it all ends up being a reflection on you. And guys, it would have been cheaper and it would have been more efficient if they had just went and dropped it off at the post office. And listen, I get it, but the post office sucks so bad. But at least I could track the package as it traveled the country. I ordered something here a few weeks ago. It made it all the way to Starkville. And then they decided, at the Starkville post office, they decided, rather than deliver it to me, that they wanted to send it down to Macomb. And I don't know why I went to Macomb. Then it goes down to Macomb, and of course, it's not a Starkville package, so they send it back. Then it has to go back through Jackson. And then the Starkville, so I get it, you know, maybe 3 days later. But I joked, I said, guys, if you went so far south, you could have at least brought me some wards back, right? But it's frustrating, man, it is. And yeah, again, if you want to be a successful small business, you got to move like a big business. You do. You have to. And that's the thing that just, you know, when we get, I mean, how many years have we bailed out the dadgum post office, right? Why can't we get this fixed? And I think the central issue is that we have so many people these days that don't value their customers. As long as they get off at 5, and as long as the direct deposit post, everything else is a bonus, right? And of course, if you go in there and raise your voice a little bit, they're going to call the police on you. Don't dare be upset because they can't meet your expectations. And I'm not expecting much. You're the ones that conveyed the expectation. I paid for 2-day shipping. It's been a week, and it's still somewhere in Texas, right? I mean, it's just, it's nuts, man. It is. And again, I don't want to be too whiny here, but I wish more people took pride in what they did. I take a lot of pride in what we do, and maybe my expectations of other people are too high. Maybe. But I joked with somebody recently, and it really wasn't a joke. I was a little bit angry. But I said it in a humorous way, kind of wrapping up a conversation. It was some money that was owed to me. And we had done everything we needed to do. And it eventually gets to me. And I said, hey, you know, listen, tell your contact with that company that they're very grateful they don't work for me. And he laughed. He said, what do you mean? I said, because they wouldn't work for me longer. I said, you guys can put up with it. I'm not going to, you know. And again, it's like the thing that I think about too, there's so many rackets out there, right, about to get our money. So along those lines too, like, you know, you make these deposits to the bank and sometimes they withhold some of your deposit. Where does that interest go? So the money's just sitting in a holding account, drawing interest. Why isn't that interest mine? Why, you're the one that put the policy together that you're going to withhold a portion of my deposit. So if you're earning money on my money, why don't I benefit in that? Right? Again, just one of those things that make you go, hmm. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. Man, I love Bulldog Burger Company. Yeah, coming off that rant, it makes me appreciate the quality of service I always get when I go to Bulldog Burger Company and really any of the Eat With Us restaurants. There's accountability there. Not to mention, too, like, you know, I may run the town and I may run into John Bean or I may run into the fans, right? And so that's the thing I love about doing business with small business that knows how to do business. They got to see me out in the community, right? So there's an expectation of excellence. Not that they need me to hold them accountable, but Bulldog Burger Company, it kind of goes with their foundational standards. Is it customer service is job one, right? Don't you wish more people prioritized you and your dining experience? Well, that's what you're going to get. Consistent service, great food at a great price, in a great atmosphere. You're always going to get that at Bulldog Burger Company. So don't overthink it. Don't put yourself in harm's way and say, hey, I think I'll go try this. Stick with the winners. Stick with Bulldog Burger Company. Find your own favorites on that menu. You'll be glad you did. If you're a newbie to Bulldog Burger Company, let me recommend just the Bulldog Burger, right? You can't go wrong by doing right. That's always the right decision. But I'm, again, kind of hooked on these smash burgers. And I do like the onion rings, even though I don't like onions, which is weird. I know it is. I can't explain it myself. I didn't choose this life. It chose me. But you can get that chocolate shake to go, and you can ride that ride home with a smile. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay. Over the course of the weekend, I have talked to a score of people about this issue. I wrote an article about it today. It's about the NCAA rule of restitution. And, it's always really kind of been a deterrent. And we were the example. Us in Oregon State back in the mid-70s were the examples of the NCAA rule of restitution. Basically, what the NCAA did 50 years ago, and you're going to ask, well, how is this relevant today? I'm going to get to that. 50 years ago, they decided, hey, for you whippersnappers out there that want to take us to court over rules that you agreed to play by, in the event that you lose in court, we're going to sanction you. If we're proven to be correct, then you're going to pay for it. And that's what happened to us over the Larry Gillard case. And then it was Lonnie Shelton at Oregon State. And so what he... Football is back, and thank goodness for that. My friends over at Prize Picks bringing out their best offer to date. New users who sign up will get $150 in lineups. That's if you win your first $5 lineup. It's pretty simple. If you win your first $5 lineup, you get $150 in lineups. And now, Prize Picks is available nationwide. So what you waiting for? Lock in for kickoff because everyone and everything is on Prize Picks. So what are you guys excited about this football season? I think the Steelers are going to be better than many people expect. I'm all over that aspect of it. I think that Steelers defense is going to kind of return to form. I think Pittsburgh's going to make a run at this thing in the AFC North. Maybe you see things a little bit differently, but you need to get in the game and get some skin in the game with me on Prize Picks. Now, Prize Picks is going crazy with the deals to start football season. They're just as excited as you and I are. They're giving you this new promo every day during a very stacked September. Make sure to sign up now for guaranteed picks every Sunday, along with profit boost and daily discounts throughout the entire month. Plus, the app is very simple to use, and it's very user-friendly. You just pick 2 to 6 players and then pick more or less on their projected stats like pass yards, rush yards, fantasy score. It's the best way to get more locked in on game day. You can make all the picks you want across any sport, all in the very same app. Download the app today and use code BONEYARD to get $150 instantly in lineups if you win your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, run your game. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hey, if you could wake up tomorrow and just be better at one thing, what would it be? You know, maybe it's less doom scrolling. Maybe it's more time with your family. Maybe it's making more time for the things that bring enjoyment. You know, I'm a bit of a workaholic, to be quite honest with you. You know, I could schedule some time to do some things away from the office. And I think all of that helps me. I enjoy my work, but sometimes it's just simply good to get away. You know, better is a feeling, and it's really defined by you. And for BetterHelp, it's a BetterHelp therapist who really gets you. It's a focus on global emotional well-being with thousands of therapists and millions of members in over 100 countries. Well, it's progress. You know, and maybe it's getting better at making more time for yourself to do the things that you love. Sign up today and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. And this is one of the reasons it's so relevant today. Lonnie Shelton was a star basketball player at Oregon State. He signed a contract with an ABA franchise and then kind of had buyer's remorse and decided, hey, I'm going to go back to school for another year. So he sued and got a TRO. Well, he went and played. Well, eventually, guess what happened? It was overturned. And then the NCAA went back and said, hey, you played an ineligible player. We told you he was ineligible. You used a Homer judge to get him eligible. So now you got to forfeit all those games, and everything that he contributed has to be stricken from the record book. Now, there have been some more modern cases, too. The sanctions just haven't been so severe because schools have complied, because there is the fear that the rule of restitution can be used again. You've heard this talked about a little bit, and a lot of people said, oh, it'll never be used again. It's kind of the nuclear option. Well, yes, it can and will be at some point. And I think the way that things have gone, where everybody is just running out to the state court system, I think the NCAA is going to draw a line in the sand, and they're going to make an example out of somebody. And you can say, well, Steve, how could they do that? Well, it's very simple. The NCAA is a voluntary organization. When you sign your charter and your member institution agreement, you agree to play by the rules of the NCAA. Furthermore, the NCAA rules are voted on by the NCAA membership. So as a school, you are part of the voting populace within the NCAA. You get to vote. If you oppose a rule, then just vote against it. It's pretty simple. You know, these committees are made up of your athletic directors. It's not like, again, some bureaucrats are just kind of sitting up there saying, here's what we're going to do. So, to kind of get this more modernized, as you guys have read over the course of the last week, there are players that are in NFL training camps that want to come back to college. So they're trying to get cut so they can come back and play again. Now, here's the one thing I would say about that. A lot of people say, hey, they can come back and maybe boost their pro stock. I think their pro stock is shot for the most part. If you proved you couldn't make it now, why would you make it then? How are you going to be that much better next year? Right? Those are the things I think. If I'm an NFL executive and a guy comes to camp and doesn't make it, well, I'm not going to mess with that guy again next year because it's going to be somebody else that maybe can make it through a training camp. And so as you guys have seen, you've got pro players. Now, flashback to earlier this year, you had the Bediako thing at Alabama. And he had played, of course, a two-way contract with the NBA and the G League. And then he decided, hey, I'm going to go back to Alabama. Now, he graduated in 23, went undrafted, and then signed the free agent deal. And then decides to come back and play in college. It's absolutely absurd. And they got a TRO, and he got to play, and then eventually they lost the injunction. It was reversed, and then they benched him. And so I was curious, well, why didn't the rule of restitution apply there? I think it should have. It's, well, because once the TRO had been kind of resolved of itself, of its own volition, Alabama sat him. I would have punished him anyway. That's just me. If there was any rule out there I could have punished Alabama for, I would have done it. I would have hammered him, or I would have told the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee, do not put them in a tournament. I would not have allowed them to skirt the rules and then live to tell about it. That's just me, because I believe in accountability. And so now you've got a bunch of this that's happening. Now, it's also important to note, the NCAA is in the process now of challenging all of these state lawsuits, all of them. The new ones that get filed tomorrow and by Friday, they're going to be challenged too. And one of the things I think is important to understand is I see like some of these sports lawyers, oh, it's a big win. Guys, there's not a win until they take the field. Because there's no problem in practicing. You can get your TRO, you can go to practice. But it's not just up to the court system if you play or not. That's important to recognize. Because a head coach has an athletic director. An athletic director has a university president. So just because the court says you can play doesn't mean that your school is going to play. You can't sue for playing time. I guess you could, you just wouldn't win. So now it's kind of in the hands of the schools and in many returns, the conferences. Now, Greg Sankey sent a sworn affidavit to the judge in the Betty Ocko case. He did the same thing last week in this R.J. Louie case in LSU. Basketball player transferred into LSU from St. John's. Also a guy that signed the pro contract, just like Lonnie Shelton did with Oregon State. So there's precedent within that sport and within this organization. And so Sankey again, and people say, hey, what is this? Is an overreach by our commissioner. I completely disagree. Completely disagree. And I've had it told to me by a source out of Birmingham that this is not an issue that the league schools want to go up against. Because we just went through all those Betty Ocko, and it's so funny, some of the same schools trying to follow that model were some of the same ones that were crying behind the scenes about the Betty Ocko thing. Well, we shouldn't take the floor if they're going to let him play. We got to make a stand here. And then now that that's been resolved, of course, Betty Ocko deemed ineligible, couldn't play any further. Now they're trying to do it with football and with basketball. Some of our same schools within our own league that were critical of Alabama and Nate Oates and Greg Byrne for doing it. And listen, Greg and Nate were wrong. And some would say, well, you know, if they're going to allow it, they strictly opposed it, and Alabama had to take it to court. And if it were me, and I was the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, I think every Alabama home basketball game next year will be played at like 9 a.m. That would be me. We're going to play at 9 in the morning or at 10 at night. We're going to work with our broadcast partners, and we're going to make this as inconvenient for you as possible. And you know what else? All your tougher games are going to be on the road. So you got to play Kentucky. You got to go play Florida. Well, those games are going to be on the road. You know, not only are we not going to give you a marquee matchup in primetime, we're not going to give you a marquee matchup at home. So all of your marquee matchups are going to be on the road, and then we're going to give you the bottom half of the league at home in an opportune time. That's what I would do. And I have been told indirectly that the league office is kind of letting people know, do not try us on this. Not saying they would follow my recommendations, but I would not go screw with the guy that's responsible for the schedule. That's just me. And so it's interesting how this is all kind of playing out. So back to what we're talking about with the coaches. So we had a deal last week, and I learned of this today because I don't keep up with everything around the conference. Arkansas soccer had 2 5-for-5 players that were granted the waiver through the Wisney versus NCAA case. Well, they played 2 games. Well, then the ruling comes down Friday, and now they're benched. They don't play again on Thursday. They're trying, one of them is trying to get a TRO to continue to play. And again, that'll be challenged. But when Greg Sankey is sending out a memorandum to the SEC membership telling everybody, hey, these players are ineligible, and then you got these schools, and you can say what you want to. You can say, well, the schools aren't doing it. Well, they're allowing it to happen. Right? Because if you went to somebody and said, hey, listen, even if you go get a TRO, we're not going to play you. Because if we play you, and then the NCAA wins, and your legal shield is removed, then we're going to have to forfeit the games you played in. Because they have deemed you ineligible. And you remember that financial aid agreement that you signed when you came in? It said you would abide by all NCAA and SEC and school rules. Remember that document you signed? Yeah, well, we're still accountable to that. And so the question you have to ask, and of course there are some Bolsheviks out there that will just, you know, flip their finger off at the NCAA and the SEC office and say, come get me, bro. But how many universities do you know that would be willing to take that risk? Because according to the rule of restitution, if you play in an eligible player, like they deemed that we did with Larry Gillard, you got to forfeit those games. Which means not only would you have to forfeit those games, you might miss the playoff. You might miss the NCAA men's or women's basketball tournament because you may need those wins to qualify. And so it kind of goes back to the Jeremy Bloom case. Do you guys remember Jeremy Bloom? I went back and researched just to kind of refresh myself on it as I wrote that article today. So Jeremy Bloom was a pretty good receiver at Colorado. He wasn't Eric Moulds. You know, he wasn't a superstar. But he was also an X Games snowboarder. And he was really good. He was probably a better snowboarder than he was a football player. And that's when MTV and everybody was doing, you know, X Games. It was incredible. It was new. And it kind of created a revolution in many respects. Well, Bloom had endorsement deals through the snowboarding side. Right, he went out and earned endorsements. And then the NCAA said, nah, you can't do this. Now, the argument for Bloom, which I thought was a very good one, was like, well, hey, you have some of these guys that play football and baseball. And there was one particular, I can't remember the player. There was a, maybe Drew Henson. I think it was. Anyway, there was Michigan quarterback Drew Henson. Had signed a baseball contract and then was going to play his senior year of football and then go play pro baseball. You're like, hey, well, he made money at his secondary sport. Why am I treated any differently? And I think that's a fair question. So when they got the court case filed, they found out that the presiding judge in Colorado was a season ticket holder to Colorado Buffaloes football. Right? And so everybody involved thought, well, this will get approved. No, it didn't. The Colorado Buffalo season ticket holder judge denied the request and later stated one of the reasons why is he was afraid of the NCAA rule of restitution. That with the NCAA deeming Bloom ineligible for accepting financial endorsements, that if Colorado played him after Bloom was gone, then Colorado could be sanctioned. And so for the greater good of Colorado Buffalo football, he denied Bloom's request for an injunction. That didn't happen in Pittsburgh, Mississippi, just in case you're wondering. But my point in all of that is what you see on Twitter is theater. What you see on the field is reality. So yes, we may get remedy in the state court system. Does that mean that your university president and athletic director are going to sign off and let your coach play you until this stuff is resolved? And you can say, well, you know, Steve, if they're legal, they're legal. Well, are they really legal? And if so, why aren't more people going out and signing them? Right? And so the memorandum came out over the weekend, late Friday evening, or Friday afternoon, that anybody that played, because when it first came out, I didn't make the connection. They said anybody that competed, and I'm thinking, well, who in the world's competing? Well, you know, men's and women's soccer started last week ahead of the ruling, and there were some players around the country that were deemed eligible by the Charlotte Swinney ruling that suddenly on Friday were ineligible. And so the NCAA came out and said, hey, there will be no violations for anybody that's had players compete under this TRO, but they are now ineligible. So there'll be no problems with that. But there's some split-level communication in that statement, and I think it's reasonable to infer that the NCAA is basically telling people, we're talking Scott Bierby here, the chief legal officer from the NCAA, basically telling people, you know what? You were protected if you played before the appeal. If you push the issue, didn't say this, but that's what you kind of infer. If you push the issue and play these players, then there could be violations. What's interesting to note is the 105-man football roster doesn't have to be registered with the NCAA in their database until the day before your first game. So you've got some time to play out. Now, for teams that play this week in week zero, and there's like, 22 games this Thursday? So for those teams, they got to Wednesday. And once the 105-man roster is submitted, it's over. There can be no additions to that. It can't be a scenario where, well, so-and-so quit the team, we'll just replace him with a walk-on. Doesn't work that way. The roster is frozen once it's certified. So the question that I think is going to be interesting to watch is how many of these 5-for-5 players will be submitted by their respective schools as part of their 105-man roster. And of course, it's a little different with FCS, but on the Division I level. Now, if you've got room under the 105, maybe you take the chance, right? Because you're not out anything. But if you put them on the field and then you later find out that you've lost, you got to forfeit a game, maybe you look at things a little differently. And so I think there are some people that are rather conservative when it comes to putting the university and the athletics department in harm's way. They're not going to push the issue with these players. Now, of course, you got Lane Kiffin, who may be most obnoxious coach in college football. And again, we don't have any love for the folks up north at Ole Miss. None. But what they attempted to do to Ole Miss was wrong. Now, you can argue it couldn't happen to a better bunch, and I agree. But the way Lane Kiffin went about so much stuff was just simply wrong. And now here he is adding other players that graduated from Ole Miss, or at least exhausted their eligibility, signed a pro contract as an undrafted free agent, not going to make a team, or doesn't appear they're going to, so they're going to bring him back and take him to LSU. And again, to me, this goes back to the whole Betty Yocko thing. You know, it's like all this technicality. People are like, well, they're not using a transfer portal. Well, we're going to enter the transfer portal, but, you know, you can't say that we broke the NCAA rules because we're not actually NCAA-certified athletes. So those rules don't apply to us, and the NCAA has rules about what we call ghost transfers. So if you really want to watch, really maybe the main event as it relates to the Southeastern Conference, watch what this LSU thing does. I don't know how it's going to play out, but I would argue that probably the noisiest offender is LSU. Now, Lane Kiffin makes a good point. Either we're going to play against these guys or we're going to play with them. I don't know if any of them play when it's all said and done. But his point is a very good one. If they're recruitable athletes and, you know, we've got to go win games, we have a right to go sign them. But when you look at the totality of what we've experienced this year in the Southeastern Conference with the Bediako thing, and the fact, like the Arkansas thing, Arkansas didn't do anything wrong. But if they elect to sit those players because they're ineligible, I mean, and why would you run the risk of putting your soccer program on probation over two players you didn't think you were going to have this year? You wouldn't. If they get, you know, local remedy, of course you may want to push the envelope a little bit. But is this really the hill you want to die on? Arkansas soccer going to make the NCAA tournament anyway, with or without these players. They're a great program, a proud program. But you look at this LSU thing, and Lane Kiffin always kind of enjoys wearing the black hat. And Lane Kiffin is trying to endear himself to the fan base down there. And you know as well as I do, he loves the fact that he was able to kind of stick it to Ole Miss too. Oh, Xavier Harris is thinking about coming back to college. He may go to Ole Miss. Nope, coming to LSU. Daquan Wright may come back. Oh, he's going to LSU, right? There's just a lot of this that's going on that is just kind of asking for trouble. I don't mean pushing the envelope asking. I mean just like riding down the road with a bale of marijuana in the trunk, both middle fingers out the window with AC/DC's Highway to Hell playing at full blast on the radio. That's how it feels. It's almost like Lane Kiffin is saying, you can't do anything to me. I'm invisible and invincible except when I choose not to be. And I think that's interesting. Of course, LSU people are like, hey, this is what we want. Got to have the best roster possible. And you, who knows where they are? I would suspect they already were at the 105-man roster. And, of course, they have until the day before their game to finalize that roster. So in the event that this doesn't work out, and this Louisiana TRO thing is one that is one of the first ones being challenged because of the fact it's the one that's enabling pro players to come back, which is absurd. I think we would agree. It's absurd. That's probably the one thing we can all agree on, is that pro players shouldn't be able to come back and play college sports. Shouldn't be. And my honest opinion is, I don't think that professional foreign-born players should be able to do it either. I think that's discrimination too. You won't let American players do it, but you'll let foreign-born players do it. I think the whole thing's ridiculous. If you have played as a professional, you shouldn't be amateurs. And then, of course, there's all these, well, Steve, you know, they're not really amateurs. Listen, I understand how rev share and NIL compensation works. I get that. But I also understand, too, that there's another generation of student athletes that are coming up that have not had their opportunity to play on the college level. These players have. And if you didn't do enough on the college level to warrant getting drafted or to make a team as an undrafted free agent, we shouldn't allow you back. You shouldn't get two bites at the apple. Along those lines, this evening, the Southeastern Conference has released a statement on behalf of the presidents and chancellors. The statement reads as follows. College athletes, not former professional athletes, have been at the heart of the Southeastern Conference. Individuals who choose to leave college athletics, sign professional playing contracts, and compete professionally should not then be permitted to return to college competition. Allowing that to occur will blur the line between college and professional sports, create significant competitive equity concerns, and reduce opportunities for high school and current college athletes. College sports are for college athletes. The current confusion around national eligibility standards emphasizes the need to advance the Protect College Sports Act. End of statement. So now you've got a statement. Now I wonder if there'll be some action behind that statement from the Southeastern Conference. I also understand from Ross Dellinger's reporting, university presidents and athletic directors from the SEC will meet for 2 days in Hoover to discuss a self-governance model, not a breakaway from the NCAA, which I don't foresee that happening anyway, but governing themselves when it comes to matters of this significance. So that's something to kind of watch. We knew last week was entertaining. This week promises to be as well. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Blair is a bulldog through and through, has a place here in town, a multiple sport season ticket holder. He rides the wave of bulldog emotion just like you do. I like to keep business in the family whenever we can. But you don't have to be a bulldog to work with Blair. You just need to have the need for a home. Whether it's your first home, your next home, your retirement home, or perhaps that game day condo you've always wanted, Blair is the only name to know. Licensed to practice in multiple states, 25 years of experience in this meat grinder of an industry. Give him a call or text today at 601-500-2344, 601-500-2344. That goes directly to Blair, not a call center, not a receptionist, directly to the man himself. He can construct loans to give you the best chance of approval. That's closeofblair.com. Okay, Jamie hits us up. Jamie with some nice words to say about the show and the top 10 list. Steve, I've enjoyed the recent segments on the top 10 list about the record industry. I've learned a lot. I also, like you, feel like that this corporate rock thing that they did with grunge is worth discussing. Were there some bands from the 80s that still thrived in some respect throughout the grunge era? Jamie, what a great question. And I have an answer for you. And we're going to talk about it just a little bit. And it's interesting, too. You know, there were some bands, of course, that kind of changed their style a little bit. There was also a lot of bands that did not get a lot of promotion from their record companies. They also did not get daytime airplay on MTV when there was more of a captive audience. And they still found a way to overcome. But let me just kind of explain to you a few things here. Okay, you guys know, as we discussed, Warrant's first two albums, Dirty Rotten Filthy Stinkin' Rich and Cherry Pie, both went multi-platinum. Then Dog Eat Dog came out. That one struggled a little bit. It's still a pretty good album. Well, then they kind of changed up their sound a little bit at the request of the record company, and they produced Ultraphobic. That was released in March of 95. It was not a good record. It did not chart, and it had absolutely no production behind it. It sold less than 20,000 copies. Certainly a casualty of the corporate dynamic in rock music. Number five, a band that you guys love too. You know, you had a great time with Night Songs and Long Cold Winter, and many of us with Heartbreak Station. But Cinderella released album number four, Still Climbing, in November of 1994. Sold less than 50,000 copies. It did reach the Billboard Top 200 at 178, but it didn't last. Then there was Skid Row's Subhuman Race. Again, kind of a change in performance, and many of the fans rejected it. But also, too, there was not any real corporate promotion behind it. But we loved the Skids. You know, everybody had the self-titled record. And then, of course, when Slave to the Grind came out, it debuted at number one. Then they had the EP that did really well, too, B-Sides Ourselves. Well, they get back together and release in March of 95, Subhuman Race. Now, that's the album that's got Into Another, which is probably the best Skid Row song you don't know. And Breaking Down was a song that got some play on some TV shows, but it sold less than 165,000 copies. Moving on in our list here, in March of 94, Motley Crue released the self-titled album with John Corabi as the lead singer. I love the album. I love Motley. And listen, people say, Steve, you got to be a Motley purist. If it's not Vince, it's not Motley. I disagree. I think musically, this is one of the best albums that Motley ever did. but it never, ever caught on. People rejected it because it didn't have Vince. The record company didn't believe in it. It did peak at number 7 on the Billboard charts, and it eventually went gold. But in the U.S., it sold about 350,000 copies, which brings us to the two most successful mid-90s albums from traditional 80s rock bands. Now, these two bands were not really considered glam, and that's the thing we're going to get to, right? Tesla was number 2. Tesla's Bust a Nut is an incredible album. It reached number 20 on the Billboard charts, despite the fact it had limited to no commercial production and promotion. They didn't get the end cap at Sam Goody. They didn't get the big display at Tower Records. They got very little airplay. They got very little video play, despite the fact they had a couple cool videos. It still was a gold record, and it basically more than doubled sales of Motley Crue's self-titled album. The best-selling album of that era from a traditional 80s rock band came out in October of 94, peaked at number 3 on the Billboard chart, and went platinum as Queensrÿche's Promised Land. The reason I bring these two albums up is Tesla and Queensrÿche, while they were kind of unfairly lumped into the 80s, you know, glam scene, and they toured with those bands, and they were contemporaries because they shared a genre in some respects, they were more traditional rock bands. They weren't, you know, three chords and a tube of Revlon, right? I mean, it was different. Tesla's just a great rock band. Queensrÿche, probably the greatest progressive rock band of my generation. But Promised Land did exceptionally well. But today our focus, Jamie, is going to be on Tesla's Bust a Nut. Now, if you loved the first three Tesla albums, and I know many of you did, you had Mechanical Resonance, which was great. The Great Radio Controversy, one of the best albums of the era. They followed it up with Psychotic Supper, which was also great. And then music began to change in 91. The fact that Tesla could still do nearly a platinum record without any promotion from Geffen Records says a lot about the fans of Tesla. So today we're going to profile this record. It actually has 13 tracks on it, but I've narrowed it down to a top 10. And we'll run it down for you. Number 10 on my list from the Bust a Nut album is Rubber Band. It's a rocking track. I like to open up our list with those. Cool track. Number 9, She Want. Good song. It's, again, kind of straight ahead rock and roll. Number 8, a great track. Very kind of nostalgic. You know, it's A Wonderful World. It's a very positive song. If you don't know it, you should. The album opens with an intro called The Gate, and that goes into Invited, which is the lead track. I've been invited, but I just can't make it, right? And that's your good friend and host. I get invited to a lot of stuff, and a lot of times it just feels like such an imposition to go. But it's a great way to start. Number 6, great kind of, not really a ballady song. Kind of starts that way, but it's got a little bit of tempo to it. It's A Lot to Lose. And basically, it's about a relationship. Like a guy recognizing what he has in his significant other. Great song. Number 5, this to me is just classic Tesla. There's a lot of deeper cuts on some of these albums that are even better than the singles. This is one of them. It's Action Talks at number 5. Action Talks and BS Walks. And it's just a rocking guitar track. Number 4, this was a single, Need Your Lovin'. They kind of made fun of themselves. You know, it had the gratuitous Marshall Stack scene, girls in bikinis type scene. It was like a silliness, kind of making fun of 80s videos. And, of course, that was all the direction of the music company. But, again, they didn't do much to promote the album. But a great track. Number 3. A track that, again, I think is one of the better Tesla tracks that you probably don't know. It's called Try So Hard. I Try So Hard to Believe, right? And there's just so much of it about, it's just kind of being disillusioned in life. It's like you feel like you're doing all the best things you can, but maybe the world around you isn't kind of matching your energy. Number 2, probably a song that you know, It was the most successful single from this album, and it's about 6 minutes long. But man, it absolutely rocks. It's Mama's Fool, and it starts out, you know, kind of this little acoustic, little blues type sound, and out on the road, a long way away from home. It's great, and it kind of has an outro that matches it. But basically, see, I may be crazy, but I ain't no fool, right? There's so much of that. You know, Mama didn't raise no fool. It's a great song. But number one, and this may be the best Tesla song that most of you have never heard. It absolutely is a scorcher of a track. And basically, it's about a relationship that maybe is improper. Maybe it's a significant friend on the side of a relationship that may be inappropriate. That's really what it's about. It's like, you know, Shine Away is the name of this track. It's like, I'm afraid of what could happen if you shine my way. It's like he's kind of troubled. It's like, I've got this attraction for you, but I got somebody at home waiting for me. And I need you to kind of step up and do the right thing, because I don't know that I'm weak enough to tell you no. But man, I tell you this, no matter what you think about the lyrical content, this is an absolutely rager of a rock and roll song. And I do not understand why this was not pushed. I truly believe this album would have easily gone platinum had this song and this album been promoted. And you, listen, you could pick it up, you know, back in those days, you know, Walmart and places like that. But again, there just wasn't a lot of promotion around it. And you didn't get to hear it on the radio because everybody was playing, you know, all the rock channels kind of changed their format to play more 90s music from the grunge and post-grunge era. And if you were somebody listening to terrestrial radio, you would never have heard anything off Bust a Nut on the radio. And they weren't getting any love from MTV either. It's like when Need Your Lovin' came out, you know, it was the first single, the kind of the crazy video, you know, and not hardly any daytime spins. Basically, the only time you could see it on MTV was Headbangers Ball. And then by the end of the year, Headbangers Ball was about to be canceled. And so Mama's Fool basically never really got to play on MTV. And what's so crazy? MTV basically started a series of specials based on Tesla's five-man acoustical jam. When that came out, that led to the MTV Unplugged series because of the success that Signs and other tracks had. And it was incredible to think Tesla basically gave MTV this very memorable idea. And then they just said, you know what? Hey, we're going to throw you guys out like the trash. To make a long story short, the Geffen Records just finally said, you know what? We're done. And despite the fact that this nearly went platinum, they just kind of moved on from them. And so Tommy Skeetch, of course, had to go into drug rehab, left the band, and then next thing you know, they're on hiatus. Brian Wheat's working with Soul Motor, and then Jeff Keith and Tommy Skeetch had Bar 7. It was originally called Sofa King, and then it became Bar 7. They had a great, great album. Four Leaf Clover, of course, was the big one there. And so I share that because everybody kind of did their own thing, and then they eventually reunited. And it's just so crazy to think that a band that sold over 25 million records would not receive airplay. It just blows my mind. Like, you go back to like Mechanical Resonance, that's got Little Susie and Modern Day Cowboy. It was a great 80s rock record, platinum, right? And a lot of bands have like that sophomore slump, not Tesla. Great Radio Controversy proved to be their best selling album of all time, double platinum. Of course, Love Song, of course, was an MTV staple. Then Five Man Acoustical Jam comes out, and it was so iconic at the time because it was like, this is nuts. That album went platinum, mainly because of Signs. They followed it up with Psychotic Supper that had Edison's Medicine and Song and Emotion, platinum again. It went all the way to number 13 on the Billboard 200. That was in 91. And you know what happened in 91? the fact that they were still platinum then says a lot about the fans. And then, again, 3 years later, the wind changes a little bit. There was some internal strife in the band. But, of course, Geffen Records, part of the Big Six, and their collusion with MTV, pushed this down to a gold record. And everybody's like, oh, well, that's it. We've got to move on. And, again, I think it's remarkable, and it says a lot about fans of this band and the quality of their music, that even though music was being changed through corporate direction, the Tesla still put together a great record, and their fans still turned out and bought it without any support from the record company. And you just think, with just a little support, it would have been their fifth consecutive platinum album. How many bands from the 80s can you say that about that would have had five straight? They had four straight and came up about 170,000 copies short. It'd be impossible to do now because nobody buys physical CDs anymore. But it's remarkable to look back. The quality of the album is in no way diminished quality compared to the earlier catalog. It's not like Tesla ran out of songs to sing or ran out of great guitar riffs. They still had them all. They just didn't have the corporate backing of Geffen Records anymore. And so, again, you know, Tesla's out now, you know, opening for Motley Crue, playing on the Carnival of Sins tour, and still doing well. And, you know, they have, what, four of the five original members still with the band. I said all along, Tesla was never a heavy metal band. They're not a hair metal band. They're just a great American rock and roll band. So, Jamie, thanks for the question. I hope that I have satisfied you a little bit because I do think, again, it speaks to the quality of the musicianship of Queensryche and Tesla that really kind of towards the end of grunge, after grunge had become a national and worldwide phenomenon, even selling flannel shirts on Rodeo Drive, that a couple of bands from the 80s could still get out there and compete kind of head-to-head in many respects without any promotion from the record companies. And again, power to the people and to all the people that went out and supported those bands. But anyway, I appreciate the dialogue. I've had so many of you that have texted me and say, Steve, I've learned so much here as of late. Sometimes you just find the right vein, right? I mean, you know, you guys send suggestions in, but next thing you know, you find something that resonates with people. And I think this is an album to be celebrated. And listen, I have all the Tesla albums. I do. And there's a couple, I guess, of the more recent ones I don't have physical copies of. I need to remedy that. It's because when iTunes one day goes kaput, I'm still going to have great tunes to listen to. You guys can come over and we can jam them out. But I absolutely love this band Tesla, and it was so great too when they got back together, just to kind of, you know, wind it back together. They put those great cover albums together, reel to reel, and then next thing you know, they're off and running again. And every time that they come to Philadelphia, it's like people are like, dude, are you going? It always seems like I can't go. And I hate it because I love them so much. But one of the best shows I've ever been to in my life is when Dane and I went to see Tesla play at the Ryman. And to me, I always wanted to go to the Ryman, and I never turned down a chance to go see Tesla when I can. But to see them at the Ryman was very special for me. And I know it was special for Dana, too. As I've shared with you guys before, the very first big birthday present I ever bought her were tickets for us to go see Tesla play. And ultimately, they canceled. And ironically, we ended up getting Pearl Jam tickets instead. Funny how life works. But now here we are. Tesla's still playing to big crowds all over the country. And maybe you'll be a part of that. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart, and why? Well, they got the stuff we want. We're not complicated creatures, man. We're really not. We're Mississippi State people. We love getting more Bulldog brand. So when it's gift buying time in your life, don't overthink it. Don't try to invent a better mousetrap. Just buy us Mississippi State merchandise. And the best place to find Mississippi State merch, Campus Bookmart. Doesn't matter if it's apparel or decorative items or the things you need to detail out your fan cave, you can find them at Campus Bookmart. You may need to save a little money when you go in there. Because your eyes may be bigger than your wallet, and you get in there and you start thinking, man, there's just so much I want to buy here. Miss Kathy Brown does an amazing job outfitting that operation with tantalizing items that every Bulldog wants in their lives. If you can't make it to town to see their smiling faces, I encourage you, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That entitles you to free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. That's Campus Bookmart. Yeah, for sure. All right. Mississippi State's going to have the one media availability this week, and then we get into our game week schedule next week. So this is like the last week you don't have Bulldog football through Thanksgiving. We're almost there, but it still feels so far away, right? And it'll help a little bit that we got some Thursday night games. We'll take a little bit of a look at that before we get out of here today, just because of the fact that you're going to get a chance to watch some real football that's going to count, even though it's not your team playing. And, of course, you got some Week Zero games this Saturday, which I think the whole thing calling it Week Zero is stupid. I mean, it's just dumb. It is. But Lebby and the boys had their scrimmage. The most important thing that Leb pointed out is we got off the grass healthy. So that's two major scrimmages in Davis-Wade Stadium, and we have not received any significant injuries from those scrimmages. As you guys know, we've got a few guys kind of banged up. He mentioned Aiden Williams will beat up too. But everybody should be full go come game one other than Colin Coates. That's the only injury that we know that is season ending. DJ Reed, of course, kind of getting back up to speed. We'll see how things go. I asked Levy specifically on your behalf kind of what he liked and what he didn't like about the scrimmage. And the truth of the matter is you want there to be a little bit of both. You want to have a good scrimmage, but you want some coachable moments, right? You want to have guys still working hard to improve and tighten things up as we prepare for Louisiana Monroe. Leb said what excited me was there was good back and forth. We're still ones-on-ones, so a ton of good on good. Offense goes out, finds a way to put a drive together and score. Defensively, we put our cleats in the ground and played a little better the next two series, and then had some good things happen on both sides of the ball in the red zone. What I didn't like were how a couple things ended up coming out with the twos, both units. Some penalties that we have to clean up with those two groups, regardless of who is on the field. The expectation is to execute, so I didn't like that part of it. End of quote. So basically what it sounds like, kind of par for the Levy course, is we went down and scored on the first drive. And then Arnett, those guys kind of countered, and then we had a little back and forth. You don't want to hear that one unit is dominating the other. We've been through those stretches before where, man, this offense has been lighting everything up, and automatically you're saying, well, defense isn't going to be any good. And more times than not, you're right. Other times you find out defense has kind of dominated, and I go back to 2023. That was kind of the talk coming out of camp, is how much better the defense was playing than the offense. And back in those days, we got to see a lot more practice, and it was true. And so, again, Kevin Barbe trying to take an air raid offense, a roster that's been kind of seasoned for that, and then put some other things in that, you know, that didn't necessarily match our personnel. So some of our own decisions kind of led to the offense struggling, but we were a pretty good defense that year, and we weren't nearly the same offense without Will Rogers. And, again, I go back to, like, I remember like it was yesterday. I don't know if I'll ever forget it. And I hope at some point that I do, but I don't think I will. You know, we had these insider practice reports about how well Mike Wright was playing. And that led, of course, to our student section chanting, "We want Mike," when we were struggling a little bit on offense, as if it was Will Rogers' fault. It wasn't. It was Kevin Barbe's fault. The first time that I saw Will Rogers fake a handoff off left tackle and then attempt to roll all the way back to the right and kind of a high-low concept, and we basically just kind of turned the defensive end loose, I thought, we have no shot. We have no shot with this offense if we think that that is going to work in this league with this personnel. It's craziness, man. It really is. But that understood, we're getting a lot of this back and forth. And I don't just mean on the record. You're kind of talking to people that get to attend practice. the offense and the defense are both given as well as they take. And so there's been a lot of this that's been very competitive. And that's what you want, right? You want both sides to go into a scrimmage expecting to win, because when they get on the same sideline, they're going to be playing together instead of playing against each other. And I love the fact that we're still going one-on-one. Still having first-team offense play the first-team defense. That's the only way to get those guys ready. Now, this week will be a little bit different. We'll kind of start phasing some things down. And then we'll start getting guys' legs under them and kind of getting them into game week. And just so you guys kind of know how it all kind of plays out for us. And, as we kind of move forward here. So there was no practice on Monday. We'll have a practice tomorrow, but no availability for us. And we'll have the opportunity to meet with players after practice. We will practice on Wednesday, and that is pretty much all of the schedule that we have been provided. There will be no media opportunity on Wednesday. So what it sounds like to me, based on nearly 30 years of doing this, is that we're going to kind of begin to kind of work through our walkthroughs and things of that nature. You know, we'll start working on the technical stuff. We'll do the game prep, and we'll start getting ready for Louisiana Monroe. And, of course, there's going to be some differences at Louisiana Monroe because Bryant Vincent's no longer, coordinating one side of the team. He has brought in a new offensive coordinator, and he has changed defensive coordinators. He elevated somebody to D.C. and then demoted somebody, but kept them all on staff. So there will probably be a little carryover fundamentally with the defense at Louisiana Monroe that really wasn't good last year. But at the same time, too, there will be some different things because you're going to have a different play caller. So I suspect that we'll spend the back half of this week kind of getting guys healthy and kind of getting a head start on Louisiana Monroe. And then next thing you know, we're in the game week. And then you have Jeff Levy on Monday, and it's incredible how fast things go when we get into a regimented schedule where, hey, Mondays, we have our press conference. Most of our opponents do. So you run through all that stuff. Monday, Tuesday, what coaches said, what players said, and there's player availability on both sides. You get through offense, get through defense, and the next thing you know, it's Thursday, and then we're going to cover a high school football game. And for those curious about such, our plans this week are to be in Tupelo. Matter of fact, I got to email Greg Ellis in the morning. We're going to be in Tupelo to cover Brandon at Tupelo because there's going to be a ton of Division I prospects on that field. And our first road trip of the year, we like to stay a little bit close to the house when we can. We'll have some more extensive road trips later in the year, as you guys know. But I remind you, too, when we go to South Carolina, we were planning to go cover Riverdale because we have multiple commitments playing for Riverdale High School outside of Murfreesboro. But your good friend and host will be at South Carolina's Fan Fest. And we talked about that on the show. As we get a little bit closer, we'll give you those details again. So that's going to kind of interrupt a little bit, and then we're planning to go down to Biloxi. So we're going to have to adjust our schedule just a little bit. Also, along those lines, too, as I've mentioned, shared with you guys and on Gene's page, we're going to take advantage of the four scrimmages. The first year they've allowed four scrimmages against another team. There are some rumors out there about where we're going to do this other minor league ballpark. I'm told that has not been finalized. They're working through it. We're close. And then we'll have our scrimmage in Starkville. So make plans to attend those things. It's going to be a big part of things. But what's interesting, too, a lot of people ask a little bit about, edge, right? That's one of the reasons, of course, we still got our fingers crossed, but I am not optimistic about Malik Sela being eligible. Because if there's one position we could use an experienced player, it's at edge, because we have struggled since the portal opened to go out and get edge players. And then, we blame David Turner. Many of our fans, they blame David Turner for not being able to get it done. Well, then Dave just coached the down linemen, guys with their hands in the ground. Vincent Dancy, of course, took over outside backers and edges. Well, then it didn't get better, right? And so now DT is moving on. You bring in Ty Warren, still got Vincent Dancy. We're still kind of where we were. And really the only edge of note that we bring in is a guy that already had a pre-existing relationship with Zach Arnett. So it's going to be up to Arnett to kind of help us fix this, because he's got to be able to showcase that this is a position within this defense that you can accumulate stats and improve your own professional stock. Amari Williams is a guy we continue to hear a lot of great things about. What's interesting about him, too, is in the spring, he missed a few practices. And I had some people on within the program tell me it's night and day difference when he's not in the ball game. And so we're going to have to be somewhat creative. But more importantly, we've got to keep him healthy. And so that's another thing where, if in the event that we're able to get Malik Sela on the field, and again, I'm not optimistic at this point. I would love for that to happen. That's one of the concerns for me, is because of our inability to be able to sign bona fide edge players, that could be something we have to kind of scheme around, because maybe we're not where we need to be within that personnel group. And that's not a shot at anybody. It's just kind of how it is. But Lebby was asked about Amari. Leb says, I've seen a guy get better. He is so invested in the process, and his day-to-day, every decision the guy makes is putting him in a position to be as good as he can possibly be. He's gotten better. He will continue to do that as he is settling in to play the position, understanding it with his physicality and toughness. He'll tell you he isn't good enough because he's hard on himself, but he's done some good things, end of quote. So you love hearing that, but you also consider the fact, you know, the depth piece, right? Do we have a younger guy later in ball games that can save some wear and tear on Amari? Because, you know, you don't redshirt anybody anymore with the 5-for-5, right? So do you have some guys out there that maybe can get you 10, 15 snaps a game? And then maybe by the time you get in the back half of the season, they've learned enough, had enough film review that they can at least get in there situationally and chase the quarterback on 3rd and 15? I hope so. I just don't know we have another every down player at edge, not named Amari Williams. And again, every year you go into this and you think about, okay, like we knew 2 years ago the defensive line was going to be awful. We knew it. We didn't have to have anybody explain it to us. We just kind of held our breath and hoped for the best, but we all knew. And I think everybody in the Mississippi State media was in one accord in our reporting about how bad that defensive front was going to be in 24. We all knew. Well, you're not getting that this go-around. Now it's about maybe a spot on the two deep at one position, right? But across the board, it was like this defensive line is just not any good. And we said, hey, the offensive line's making some strides. Kind of like we talked about before, the reason the offensive line in 2024 coming out of camp that everybody felt good is because the level of competition they were getting from the defensive line was not up to SEC standards. This go around, it's a little different, right? You're getting a lot of tit for tat. And so now you just kind of say, okay, here's what I'm worried about. Okay, do we have depth playing edge that we believe has the potential to be a game wrecker? If he gets nicked up and has to miss a game, what are we going to do? So it's not the full personnel group, and it's not even really one position. It's the two deep at that position. So that's progress in roster management. When you think about the defensive backfield, you don't have any of those concerns. Because you got, you know, Kendall Dolby, a guy that's played some good football at Oklahoma. You got JG, who was better than any safety we had on the team last year. And that's saying a lot because Jerron Manning led us in tackles with 91 tackles last year. JG's a better athlete than Jerron. That's not saying I don't want Jerron. I think when you add Jerron back into this mix, if you can get him eligible, you've really got something. You've really got a bonus there. And that's incredible, right? But we're not dependent on Jerron Manning to field a good secondary. Number one, in January, we didn't expect him to be here. So we prepared accordingly. And we went out and did a really good job in the portal and went and signed some guys that we believe will be difference makers. And everybody talks about how good JG is. You know, we last year, the concern was, hey, we knew Kelly Jones was kind of coming into his own, but who's going to play the other side? We get to Southern Miss and we see Jed Jefferson pushing his leg around on a cart. Little did we know then that that was going to be an issue that affected us long term, even though Jed came back and played a little bit. You know, Diego Brumfield was a guy, but he was a two-deeper. But he was pressed into service, and when we played teams that could throw the fade to bigger receivers, that got us. We just didn't have a lot of those in the early portion of the schedule that could exploit that weakness. Ole Miss certainly did, right? And that's not a shot at Diego. Now, he's probably a nickel, to be quite honest with you, but we had to press him into service and play corner. And listen, he played hard and gave us everything he had, but in some of those matchups against bigger receivers, you know, he was just at a disadvantage. And so, you know, Jed Jefferson's a guy we continue to hear has some of the best technique on the team, and that includes Kelly Jones. He's not quite as athletic as Kelly, but, you know, from a size standpoint and a speed standpoint, he is a guy that can hold that side of the field down. And so, when you think about kind of where we are and what we have, and you flip it over to the other side of the football, are you worried about running back? I'm not. I'm worried a little bit about our lack of experience behind Fluff, but as far as physical skill, I feel good. Am I worried about receiver? No. I'm not worried about quarterback at all. The tight ends, hey, we don't have that Sadie Traore guy that we can flex out there in the slot and exploit his safety. We don't have that player on the team right now, I think, that can exploit that matchup. I think Zay Cotton and Tom can be that guy. If that's this year, I don't know. You know, Sam West is a guy that's really taken some nice strides, but you know, he's not a guy that we're going to be able to run a streak with down the hash. It's just not what he's going to – it's not his skill set. He brings a lot of value, but that tight end group may have a little more depth, but I don't know that it's quite as athletic because you don't have – you know, obviously Sadu gets drafted, right? But you don't have that piece yet. But by and large, you feel like that group is better than what you had last year, other than the fact that you don't have a proven star, a tight end. On the offensive line, I think from left guard to right tackle, everybody feels good. And, of course, the question mark is left tackle. And so what's interesting, and again, Miles McVay has played some tackle both left and right. This is not new to him. But as somebody brought up on Gene's page, you know, Steve, he was a rotational guy last year at North Carolina. And now we've got him playing the blindside protector spot. Hey, that's a valid concern. But again, I go back to even last year. You know, how bad was the offensive line? Now, some of it was injury related, right? So now it's not the full group. It's like one spot. And so again, that's progress in roster management. And I think the fact that you maybe have a left tackle that needs some reps, and you got Big Riley Williams, when you get in situations where you need some extra protection on the blind side, maybe you have that attached tight end lineup on that side. And so all of that, again, kind of factors in. But every team has question marks. Every team. But we've got a lot less than we've had the last 2 years. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. You've seen it on movies, documentaries, and you always thought, man, wouldn't it be great to do that? Well, we've got a venue that allows you to do just that, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Be sure and Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate for you, and you can peruse the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, plenty of parking. That's an underrated amenity. One less thing to worry about. Where are you going to park the car? Where's everybody going to be able to stop and park? Do we have to worry about getting towed? No, you don't. In addition to those Facebook items that you can check out, understand they have 6 bedrooms, 2 soon to be 3 baths, but also 2. Check out those booking options. You can book through Airbnb or Vrbo. But if you want to save a few bucks, I can help you with that. Book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's BSR10, the number 10, to get 10% off your stay just by being a listener to this show. It's just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, so conveniently located to all your favorite parts of Starkville, all your favorite restaurants, shops, and, of course, the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating right then and there. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse, be sure and check it out today. Okay, we received our first men's basketball commitment for the 2027 class. Jacques Mitchell from Booker T. Washington out in Tulsa, Oklahoma, a 6'3", 180-pound shooting guard, ranked as the number two player in the state of Oklahoma for the 2027 cycle. He is a borderline four-star, currently listed as a three-star in 89, so just a little bit of traction there, and he could possibly be a four-star. Currently claims offers from Arizona State, TCU, Ole Miss, Tulsa, and Mississippi State. Says he's 1,000% committed. You know, you love to see that, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of what he looks like as we kind of move forward. But Chris Jans and staff, you know, kind of drawing first blood there, kind of getting some things accomplished. And as you guys know, we had some upheaval, shall we say, on the roster for the 26-27 season. And so now we're kind of moving forward, and Jacques listed more as a combo guard. So, you know, we'll kind of see how it plays out. And it's interesting, too, the 247 Sports composite has Mitchell ranked as the number one player in the state of Oklahoma. So we'll see how it plays out. But, again, we're right there at a four-star. And a young man, obviously, that has some ability. And we hope to have more for you about him as we kind of move forward. And, of course, you also learned today Mississippi State's going to do a home-and-home men's basketball series with Central Florida. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, you like getting this information. You know, you like seeing the schedule kind of come to be. And as you guys know, it's a big year for Mississippi State men's basketball. Huge year. And I am still a Chris Jans believer. I know some of you, the bloom is off the rose a little bit. I think what happened is, as you guys know, you know, there is no guarantee when it comes to portal players. And for a couple of years, we had like one guy that didn't pan out. Last year, we had multiple guys that didn't pan out the way we hoped and expected. So, again, if anybody's earned a mulligan on this campus, I think it's Chris Jans. And I have people that call me and say, well, Steve, what do you think? What do you mean, what do I think? Went to the tournament 3 years in a row. We missed it last year, and you know, we had a bad portal class. Right? We had a couple good players, but you know, we just didn't have, you know, the pieces around Josh Hubbard to compete the way we wanted to. And you go back, I mean, hey, goodness, I mean, that first year we make the tournament, we had no business making the tournament. That, to me, that shows you what kind of coach Chris Jans is. He walked in here day one and turned kind of a hodgepodge roster into an NCAA tournament team. And so, yeah, we make it 3 out of 4 years. We'd make it 3 out of the next 4 years as well. We'll build a statue, right? I mean, just you just got to kind of see it for what it is. I just don't think there's any point in being ungrateful. And I do think Chris Jans fits us. And, of course, he's had some people kind of pursue him during his time here at Mississippi State. But we've done a good job. I mean, is it a great job? No. Do we want to get out of the first weekend? Yes, we do. We want to hang a new banner in the hump and not just be, you know, a participant. But, guys, there were years we didn't even go to the tournament. And, you know, that should always be the goal. To be an NC2A tournament team, as Ben Howland used to say. And we've had some decent teams not make it. We've had some other teams that were very talented that did and made a run. But in no way am I off the bandwagon with Chris Jans. And there were some times last year that I was very frustrated watching the team. Guys in my group text can tell you, I get frustrated when we don't play well. And, again, I think that's just kind of part of sports fandom in every sport. And it's interesting, too. There's a lot of people out there that think Chris Jans can do no wrong. Yeah, that's not fair either. But when you consider what he has done with a program that really had a long stretch there, but we didn't accomplish a whole lot, and for him to show up and take us to the tournament 3 consecutive years, there's no need whatsoever, I think, to have any talk about potentially making a coaching change. I mean, it just, you know, we have one year where things kind of go haywire, where do you just kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater? Makes no sense to me. makes no sense. So you plan to be there in Humphrey Coliseum as your men get going. And again, it's just so incredible to think, you know, Josh Hubbard obviously will break the record around midseason this year, the scoring record. And that's going to be something special. It truly is. And so I'm excited about it. And I know most of you are excited about it. Right now, everybody's kind of in football mode. But, man, we're going to play men's basketball in no time. Absolutely. Let's take a quick look at the Thursday schedule for football, just to see if anything kind of strikes our fancy. I was looking at some of this stuff earlier. I was amazed at how many games are actually being played on Thursday. I mean, it's just, there's going to be a lot of football, you know, a lot of football, if you're so inclined. But it's mainly minor football, right? So we'll have Maine and Towson State, if you're so inclined, Mercyhurst and Youngstown State, Ohio Dominican, Morehead State, Stony Brook versus Delaware State, Chattanooga versus West Georgia, Charleston Southern versus Lindenwood, Virginia Wise, I didn't know there was a school that had football, against Presbyterian, Concord versus Davidson, Southern Illinois and West Florida, Anderson versus Furman, Glenville State versus Elon, Mississippi Valley will open up against Nicholls State at 6 p.m. Houston Christian against Southeastern Louisiana, Eastern Illinois against Murray State, Lafayette against Georgetown, Winona State against St. Thomas, Minnesota, Northwestern will play Western Illinois, Gardner-Webb against Austin Peay, Central Arkansas against UT Martin, South Dakota Mines against Drake. Are you excited yet? Long Island against North Dakota. And then whoever LCU is will play Northwestern State. Yeah, the Deem, the what were they, the Demons? I can't remember if they're Demons or Devils. I lived there. And then we got a little football on Friday. I'm never a big fan of college football on Friday. I think high school football should be reserved for community involvement. But yeah, and then you get, of course, you know, a lot of games this weekend. So you can kind of get your fill, you know, of kind of what's happening. And it's just so interesting, you know, again, you know, the week zero thing is just so odd to me. I mean, just call it week one. When you get into next week, you'll get to see Missouri against Arkansas Pine Bluff on Thursday. You know, but yeah, not a lot of big games for a while. But man, once we get into and the next weekend, you know, we're going to have an opportunity to basically start watching football on Friday and then kind of run through Labor Day. You know, we'll have college football for a few days there. And I'm sure there'll be some action pretty early in the year too. But, yeah, I'm excited. But looking at bigger games for this weekend, North Carolina versus TCU in Ireland. You know, what my concern about that is like the trip back, right? Because, you know, we just went to Arizona and then came back and just sleptwalked through that LSU game and still should have won it. But that'll be fun. NC State will take on Virginia. That's going to be a 2:30 game on ESPN. That'll be in Charlottesville, Virginia, favored by 5.5. But outside of that, man, you know, some interesting games. Yeah, you know, what about this Memphis game at UNLV? UNLV favored by 5.5. You know, Memphis, of course, Ryan Silverfield and that staff left for Arkansas. Dan Mullen will probably wear these boys out. I would suspect that's the case. But, yeah, so there'll be some interesting games. A lot of games on TV, kind of across a variety of networks. But, yeah, you should be able to check out some games. In New Mexico State at Florida State, I've recently watched some of the stuff. You know, when you're sitting around the house just kind of chilling, I watch more reels than I do TV. People think Mike Norvell is on the hot seat for this year. I don't know what you guys think, but it's just so interesting to me that a guy could be, you know, one win away from the playoff, and they lose their quarterback, and then a couple years later, everybody's ready to fire him. You know, I always thought Mike Norvell was kind of a shaky hire in the first place. It's my feel. You know, Ole Miss almost hired him, almost. And then elected not to. And now here we are. But I would say things worked out, you know, for Mike as far as, you know, he'll get paid a, you know, an absolute king's ransom when they eventually fire him. And maybe that's this year. But it's just so crazy to me when you start thinking about, you know, Mike Norvell was hired, you know, part of the COVID thing, you know. after the 19 season. But man, when you look at the numbers, man, it is like outside of 22 and 23, man, there has been absolutely nothing to write home about. So you go 3-6 in 20, 5-7 in 21. You kind of get it going in 22. You go 10-3. And then you go 13-0 in the regular season, and you go to the Orange Bowl and you get beat there. But you finish back-to-back top 10 finishes. From there, it has been an absolute train wreck, man. 2-10. Last year they got better, went 5-7. Didn't make the bowl game. But Mike Norvell is 38-34. And in six seasons, he's had four losing seasons. It's a wonder it's taken this long, right? But, yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of see how things play out. And you got to wonder, you know, what does Mike Norvell need to do to keep his job? I don't know. You know, what would Mike Alford do? I think it's safe to say he's going to make a coaching change unless something dramatic happens this year. All right, quick note, too. We had to make a change with the website. Somebody pointed out to me on Twitter that the Duty Noble book website had been hacked, so I get a hold of the publisher. They have now changed it to a safer landing spot. Go to dutynoblebook.net. I've actually changed that on the jeans page, pinned thread at the top of the baseball board. So dutynoblebook.net. But if you need it and can't find it, just hit me up. I'm happy to provide it. Be sure and get signed copies of all my sports titles there: Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dog Pile, The Dude, of course, the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. But yes, thanks for pointing that out to me. It's not something that I'm responsible for or keep up with. And if you guys don't tell me, I won't know. So thank you so much for the alert there. And I appreciate you passing that word on to me so I can get it into the hands of the people that can fix it. So it's been fixed. Come float. What is a True Rest Float Spa of Starkville? I went and floated. What's today? Monday? I floated Saturday? I don't remember. I think maybe it was yesterday. Who knows? But anyway, it all runs together after a while. And I sleep so much better when I float regularly. And it had been about a month since I floated. And I could tell, right? It's just my mind is so quiet in there. And especially when I don't get a lot of rest, I like to go in there and it just kind of allows me to kind of supplement the sleep. And I'm a person too that's very high strung, as you can imagine. And so when I get a chance to go in there and just kind of let my mind rest, it's such a great thing for my creativity, but just for my quality of life. You know, we've helped many other people. We may be able to help you too. Be sure and check it out today. It's the True Rest Float Spa. Dial 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my beautiful wife, Dana, and she can give you all the information you need about floating and how to get on the schedule. And, you can check it out at truerest.com. And then come join us over at jeanspage.com. Again, throughout the month of August, 60% off the annual subscription price. If you're not subscribing, you should be. Jeans Page is going to be here for a long time and already has been here for a long time. And entering our 31st year of covering Mississippi State Athletics. Yeah, how about that? 31 years. Yeah, it all started back in 1996, and so happy to be aboard for the majority of the ride, and many of you have been with us as well. It means so much to me, too. We get so many people that have been with us, and hey, you know what? We're not for everybody. There are a lot of people that want a lot less information about Mississippi State sports, and I guess there's people out there to provide that. But if you want the most comprehensive coverage of Mississippi State athletics, you can find it at jeanspage.com. And even if you can't subscribe, or maybe you're not sure about subscribing, all the big room stuff, we make that stuff free. Yeah, if everybody else has it, we just make it free. And you can read the transcripts of your player and coaching interviews and/or stories and watch those videos for free. We don't need to give you a password. You don't need to give us your email address. You can just go pull up Jeans Page and check us. Google Jeans Page and come watch whatever you want. Read whatever you want. You know, if it's behind a paywall, you'll need a subscription and you can get 60% off. That's going to do it for today, guys and gals, but we'll see you guys on Wednesday. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.